for the best in coffee drinking pleasure, always ask for Maxwell House.
It's the roar of the presses. Working day and night in the north, south, east, and west of our nation, these daily presses pour out over 48 million newspapers. And behind these millions of headlines are the country's ace reporters, men and women who bring you the inside story. Tonight, the makers of Maxwell House Coffee bring you America's Press Conference of the Air, Meet the Press, where you'll meet top newsmen in an unrehearsed, spontaneous press conference with one of the outstanding personalities in today's news, Dr. George H. Gallup. Ready for the conference are four of America's top newsmen who are here to ask the questions you would ask Dr. Gallup if you were here tonight. It's all done in the spirit of a free press and free television. Now, meet Mr. Lawrence Spivak. Mr. Spivak is the editor of the American Mercury magazine. And here is Miss Inez Robb, distinguished reporter with International News Service. Also noted among the gentlemen of the press is Mr. Glenn Neville of the New York Daily Mirror. Another important newsman here tonight is Murray Davis of the New York World Telegram. And here with us is radio's Miss Martha Roundtree, producer of Meet the Press. And here being introduced to the ladies and gentlemen of the press is Dr. George H. Gallup. Dr. Gallup, as you know, is the founder and director of the Gallup Poll. Until this last election, he accurately predicted the outcome of the last three national elections. But, along with almost all poll takers, he missed fire on President Truman's election. And now, Miss Roundtree.
We've all been so anxious to have Dr. Gallup on this program, it almost looks like picking favorites to decide whom to give the first question to. I think I'll let Mr. Davis go first.
Well, Mr. Gallup, do you give up?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Why should I?
Well, Literary Digest went down with the ship. The outfit did. Folks are in about the same boat, aren't you?
No. We've lost the battle, but not the war. We intend to learn a great many things from this election and from our analysis of what went wrong with our surveys. But I have an idea that we'll come out of this stronger. Polls will serve an even more useful function in the future than they have in the past. It's a good thing to get kicked around now and then. It's good for us, and it's good for everybody.
Mr. Neville.
Mr. Gallup, is there anything to prove that polls serve any purpose at all, that they do anything more for the country than the crossword puzzle does, for instance?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because, first of all, let me say, Mr. Neville, that I am a prejudiced witness. But it's my opinion, and it's my sincere opinion, that polls constitute the most useful instrument of democracy ever devised. They provide an objective, an accurate, and a swift appraisal of public opinion. Now, I don't say perfect. I mean, we have never claimed that they were infallible. We have never claimed that they were perfect. But I do say that they have proved accurate, and from their beginning.
Go ahead, Mr. Neville.
Well, but to what end? What good do they do? What purpose do they serve? Who do they help?
Well, they help everyone, because, as I understand it, this country of ours, this government of ours, represents a role of by public opinion. Public opinion is important in any democracy, and the extent to which it is important to have an objective and a fairly accurate appraisal of it.
Miss Robb.
Dr. Gallup, you said you think everyone is helped. Do you think Mr. Dewey would agree with you that he was helped by the polls in this last election?
Well, I don't know, and frankly, I don't care. First of all, let me explain that we regard ourselves merely as a reporting agency. We think of ourselves as scorekeepers. We have no interest whatsoever in what is done about our figures. We are not trying to influence anyone. We think of ourselves pretty much as the AP does, the INS, the UP. We are a reporting and fact-finding agency.
Go ahead, Miss Robin.
I would like to ask one other question, though. To what extent do you think public confidence has been shaken in the poll? Had you thought of taking a poll on that?
Yes. We didn't take it. Obviously, it would not be... you might think it wasn't cricket for us to take it. But the Columbus Citizen took a poll. The Philadelphia Bulletin took a poll. The Des Moines Register took a poll. The Minneapolis Tribune, two or three days afterward, to see whether people still believed in the value of polls. And believe me, they do. In fact, by a ratio of 2-1, the people still have faith in the polls.
Mr. Spivak.
Dr. Gallup, there is no question about one thing. You were just as wrong in this poll as the Literary Digest was in its poll of the Landon election. Now, have you found out why you were wrong, where you erred?
Well, we have some good ideas, but first let me correct that statement of yours. We were wrong. But the Literary Digest in this business, and from a scientific point of view or a statistical point of view, what we try to do is to be as accurate as we can. We try to assign to each candidate, from our figures, we try to see what percentage will go to candidate A, candidate B, candidate C. Now, in 1936, the Literary Digest had an error of 19 percentage points. They gave Mr. Roosevelt 39%, and he got something like 38% of the vote, or 42, and he got 19 percentage points more than that. Now, our error, in this election, believe it or not, we were on the right side in 36.
You were scientifically inaccurate, and they were unscientific.
Well, their error was approximately four times our error. And as a matter of fact, our error in this election was less than our error in 1936 when we were on the right side.
But Dr. Gallup, the one important thing is that you were just as wrong in predicting this election as the Literary Digest was. Have you found out where you erred? And can you take care of that next time, or are we going to have to take our chances again that you'll be just as wrong again?
Well, I think to answer you, yes, I do. I think we have, we haven't the final answer. We have, we fortunately started a study before the election, two studies, in fact, and those studies are now coming in. The Social Science Research Council is making a very careful study of all polls in the country. And I do not want to say or even intimate what the final investigation, what it will produce. But we do know this, that time was the important factor. And to answer your question specifically, what we have found to date is that most of the error, not only in our poll, but in polls all over the country, they erred chiefly because they did not poll in the day before the election, or the last 2 days. Our poll was stopped 10 days before the election. If we had polled up to election day, we would have been considerably, it would have been very much better. I won't go so far as to say we would have been right, but we would have been much better.
Miss Robb.
Dr. Galba, I'd just like to have you speak for a moment on how you square this with the old adage that a miss is as good as a mile.
Well, I wouldn't want to for a single moment say that we were right. We were wrong. We were as wrong as the Literary Digest. I like to get that straight. But it's a matter of degree. Now, as a matter of fact, we do not try to pick the winner only. I mean, that is the least of our difficulties in an election. And I would like to read, if I may, for just 1 second here, the release which we had in the World Telegram, Mr. Davis, 4 days before, in which we say that very thing. Whereas readers sometimes think that the sole task is picking the winner, actually, that is only part of the job. What every scientific election poll tries to do is to come as close as possible to predicting the division of opinion both in the nation and in each state. In other words, the actual percentage each candidate will receive. And that, we're not trying to pick winners. It's just as difficult to do this job when the candidates are winning by majorities of 90 to 10 as it is at the 50-50 range.
Mr. Neville.
Why were you so badly wrong in certain states? For instance, if I remember correctly, Ohio and Pennsylvania and so forth, where your percentage was
was much greater than your national average.
Well, I think that is because in these various states, our sample is smaller. As a matter of fact, Pennsylvania was one of our better states. But you have to remember that the size of the sample is fairly small in some of the smaller states, and you get a variation due to the size of the sample only.
Are you through, Mr. Neville? Mr. Davis?
Mr. Gallup, this question is confined strictly to election polling. What good is to be gained by forecasting an election that's going to be settled by the ballot anyhow? Who gains by that? Who would care? Who pays you for that? Who hires you to do it?
The newspapers.
Well, why?
Frankly, I don't know. I would agree with you entirely. I do not see, and I've said this many times, any possible social good coming from election polls. But at the same time, it has served a purpose. It served a bad purpose, too. The only way that we had in the beginning to demonstrate that the job could be done was to go through an election. And believe me, an election is not a good criterion of poll accuracy for one good reason. And that is that polls, there are a good many factors over which we have absolutely no control. So an election isn't a perfect criterion of poll accuracy.
Gentlemen, while you take a moment to catch your breath, let me say that one American poll has been turning up the same answer year after year. Yes, when it comes to coffee popularity, figures show that more Americans buy and enjoy Maxwell House coffee than any other brand. Here's one explanation why this is so.
Don't turn that dial. We're trying to get Latin America. The highlands where they grow the wooliest goats. The hottest music. And the best coffee beans. Here, Maxwell House experts select Manizales coffees for mellowness, Medellin's for richness, Bucaramanga's for full body, and other choice coffees for vigor, each for its special flavor contribution to that famous Maxwell House blend. Boom, 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 boom. And so these superb coffees go to Maxwell House, where they're radiant roasted to develop the full flavor goodness, precision ground to your taste, and vacuum packed to seal that flavor in roaster fresh. No wonder more people buy Maxwell House than any other brand of coffee. Enjoy the finer flavor of Maxwell House today. There's a smile of pleasure in every cup. Because it's truly good to the last drop. For the best in coffee drinking pleasure, always ask for Maxwell House.
Now, Mr. Spivak has the next question.
Dr. Gallup, you don't think that the American people this time voted against the polls rather than the candidates, do you? You fellows were so sure that the election was in the bag that I sometimes wonder whether the American people didn't just want to upset you.
Well, I don't know about that, but I would doubt it, and we weren't so completely sure it was in the bag.
Miss Robb.
There's one question about the polls, though, and its effect. After effect on the election, in which I'm very interested, and that is the fact that I think a good many Republicans go back and blame the polls for their defeat instead of perhaps analyzing more clearly what caused their defeat at the election polls here. Dr. Gallup, do you think that does have a rather bad effect on what's going to happen to the political picture?
Well, it has a bad effect on us if they blame us, but I do not think the polls are responsible. Of course, I'm again a prejudiced witness in this matter. I think the Democratic Party actually did a much better job of getting out the vote. I think that is one of the factors that was responsible for Mr. Truman's victory.
I'd like to ask one more question, and you mentioned the time lag, that your poll stopped 10 days before the election.
Right.
What do you think happened in that 10-day interval? Did the independent voter make up his mind?
No, the facts and figures that we're getting at the present time show that it was the undecided voter, principally. In this election, there were twice as many people as in any previous election who, 10 days before the actual balloting, before the election, had not made up their minds. Now, when we analyzed that group, as a matter of fact, we reported it in the World Telegram from time to time, it was made up predominantly of Democrats. And that should have been a warning to us. But because of the low turnout this year, we thought that this group of undecided people just wouldn't vote. And, of course, that was where we made a wrong decision.
Mr. Davis.
Mr. Gallup, in your rechecks, have you come to any conclusion why there were from 5 to 7 million people who failed to go to the poll, who were expected to go to the polls?
No, I haven't. As a matter of fact, and I've said this before, fewer people voted in this election than in any election in the last 100 years. A smaller percentage of the potential voters of the nation.
Do you expect to make a poll to find out what happened, why they changed their minds?
Yes, we now have one, and we now have almost complete figures on that.
What are the figures?
Well, we don't. It was mostly, I think, the figures, and I haven't had a chance to analyze them thoroughly. I think they indicate that two things were happening. One, the undecided people were going back to their accustomed pattern of voting. And one other thing, the people who were shifting, or thought they were shifting, from Roosevelt, I mean from Democrat to Dewey, and from Democrat to Wallace, about a third of those people at the last minute recanted.
Mr. Neville.
Doctor, if an election is not a proper subject for a poll, if it really doesn't do any good, as you say, give us an example of a subject on which a poll does do some good. I'd like to know. I still want to pursue that question of what
yes,
good the polls
I think
do.
Very good. Well, take any major issue. Take the Marshall Plan. Take conscription. Let me review that history. We took a poll in 1940 on conscription and found a majority of people of the country in favor of peacetime conscription. This was in 1940. Congressional mail was running 95-5 against it. I could go through if the people of this country had no way of finding out what the unorganized and inarticulate majority of people think, I think this country would have a great many problems that it doesn't have now. On every single issue, every single major issue of the war, every single issue of the peace, the Marshall Plan, a week or two after the Marshall Plan was announced, it was possible to report that a majority of people in the country who had opinions on it and who knew about it and who could prove that were in favor of it. I think that's a good thing.
Go ahead, Mr. Neville.
How do you know you were any more correct on those than you were on the election, though?
Well, even if we assumed, and as I said earlier, an election isn't the perfect criterion of success in this business because there are a great many factors, machine activity, group activity, one kind or another, church activity, which all influence the results, but which we can't take into account scientifically. But even assuming that that we had an error, as big as the error in this election, and the biggest error we had was on Mr. Truman, which was 5.5 percentage points, I would think that you would agree with me when I said that there is no other system, no other way that has ever been invented, which was as accurate as that.
Mr. Spivak, now.
Dr. Gallup, I'd like to pursue that question of Mr. Neville just a bit further. When you say, for example, that 55% of the people favor the Marshall Plan and 45, let us say, are against it, how do we know that that's right? And yet you may greatly influence congressional opinion that way. Isn't that the real danger? There's no check up on you.
Well,
there is an election.
There is a check. There's no direct check, of course, but I can say this. We happen to have polling organizations or affiliated polling organizations in 12 different nations. In nations like Australia, where they have referenda constantly, polls have been just as accurate on referenda issues as they have been on candidates. And in Canada, the same is true. All over the world, where the people have had a chance to vote on referenda on issues, polling accuracy is just as good as it is on candidates.
I have here a report, for example, on a poll you took and Roper took in March and April of 1948 on the question of prices. Do you think that prices in general will be higher or lower? And your poll showed that 14% of the people thought they would be higher, and the Roper poll thought that 54% thought that it'd be higher. Now, that was a terrific discrepancy, and yet both of you are supposedly scientific operators.
Both polls, I think, are operated on the same general basis. And if you will examine those questions, I saw that same result. And I would have been disturbed if there wasn't that difference. They're entirely different questions. And let me add this.
Well, may I read the question? I don't think...
Yes, all right, let me...
Your question was, do you think that prices in general will be higher, lower, or about the same 6 months from now? And the Roper question was, do you think that the prices of most of the things you buy...
You buy! You
will
see?
Be higher, lower, or about the same 6 months
exactly.
from now?
Exactly, and that is... what you're asking is whether prices are generally going to be higher. And then the other question asked, an entirely different question... What about you? Do you have more money than you had before? Are you going to spend more money?
I don't quite see that.
Well, I think if you'll read that carefully, you'll see that they're vastly different. One refers to the person himself and what his purchases are going to be in the future.
No, but prices in general certainly would reflect the prices that I think I am going to have to pay.
Well, now, if you were a person of ordinary circumstances and knew that you had to go on keeping that family budget under $50 a week, I think what you would have to say is that you couldn't buy things that were more expensive. But let me add this one thing, that
before you get off that, Dr. Ballop, I'd like to come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
The question said, do you think that prices will be higher? And the other said, do you think that the prices of most of the things you buy
will be higher? You see, that's the whole difference.
Well, I think every individual reverts these things to himself, always.
Well, I would disagree violently with you on that. Of course, it's a matter of opinion, but I would like to add this. The Princeton University did it through the Princeton University Public Opinion Project, had a polling organization and polled on issues for a year or two. They were polling almost every single week on the same questions that we had. And it was our experience through the years. I do not recall a single instance, and I never have, in the history of polling, where the same identical thought was conveyed to people being interviewed that you didn't get the same answer. Now, every instance that I've ever seen where there is a difference, if you analyze a question, you'll see that it is pretty substantially different.
Miss Robb. Well, I'm just all on Mr. Spivak's side here. I think this is splitting hairs, Dr. Gallup. I think the two questions are alike.
Well, that's the only way you could do would be to try it out on some people to see what they...
Well, I'd like to know a little bit more about the science of polling, and how are you going to shake the bugs out of it? Because there must be some bugs in it someplace.
Well, I don't deny that there are some, but I think it's like any other new field we have. It's like building an airplane. Certainly you have bugs, and nothing perfect was ever devised, and we have never claimed that it was.
But what are you going to do now that you've discovered this...
One thing we were certainly going to do, and that is if we ever go into another presidential election, and I think we will, we certainly won't, we'll poll up to the final minute. We'll never stop polling 10 days in advance. That's one thing, if you want to.
I'd just like to ask one other question. Have any of your customers asked to be released from their contracts as a result of this?
Some, surely. We lose some after every election.
Many?
Not many, no.
Do you think the newspapers were pushed, or did they fall, Dr. Gallup?
On what?
On this issue. They seem to... Frankly, I'm a little humble. I think that we were as much in error as you were. But were we pushed by by the polls, and Mr. Roper, or did we just fall of our own accord?
Well, we're willing to take the blame. I think there needs to be a scapegoat, and our heads are bloody but unbowed.
Mr. Davis, now.
Do you care to answer who hires you to do such opinion... finding as the Marshall Plan, for instance, who pays you for that? Do you care to answer that?
Well, absolutely. I'm glad you asked it. Some 125 newspapers in this country, representing every shade of political belief, underwrite all of our polls. They provide every cent of money that we have. We do not take any commercial work. We do not do any other job for money. These papers underwrite the entire job. It's somewhat like the AP, the UP, the INS in that sense. The newspapers with larger circulation pay more money, but it's entirely a newspaper job here and abroad, incidentally.
What about, that's just what I was going to ask. Who pays for the polls abroad now? Do the local newspapers?
In England, it's the News Chronicle. In Australia, a group of six papers. In In Sweden, newspapers, in Finland, and all, everywhere around the world, it's mostly the press that that supports this. And we think this is a new field. It's a new branch of journalism. I think, and you gentlemen of the press, I think, will agree that it's just as important to report what people think as it is what they do. And this, I think, is a new, legitimate, and important field of journalism.
Mr. Neville.
Well, Doctor, you speak of it as a science, though. How scientific can you get on it? Is it really a science at all? It certainly is not an exact science.
It's not an exact science, and I think that never will be an exact science as long as you're dealing with people. It can't be. And incidentally, to have predicted this last election with certainty would have required techniques with almost the accuracy of the physical sciences. So we'll never reach that point. There will always be a margin of error, and I hope in time that we will cut that margin of error down.
Mr. Spivak.
Dr. Gallup, in July, in an article in the Saturday Evening Post, you wrote that political campaigns do not change votes. Do you still think so?
I think I was wrong, frankly.
You also said that political platforms do not change votes. Do you still think so?
I think that political platforms have no influence whatsoever.
You also wrote, may I finish this?
Yes.
You also wrote that political speeches do not change votes. Do you still think so?
Well, I think I might have to modify that, too.
Now, Miss Robb.
Well, this is a purely personal question, Dr. Gallup.
But
nobody, either you or Mr. Roper, has ever asked me a question or anyone I've ever known. Who do you ask? Where do you find these people?
I'll ask you after this show, but that is a question that comes up frequently, and the plain fact of the matter is that we operate on small samples. Our normal sample, we polled some 60,000 people during this recent campaign.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Dr. Gallup, but we really haven't any more time for these interesting questions. We'll learn about next week's guest in just a moment. Right now, suppose you learn how folks all over the country enjoy a truly good cup of coffee every day in the week.
Yes, north, south, east, or west, it's Maxwell House wherever you go. Famous for finer flavor, this delicious coffee is good to the last drop. For the best in coffee drinking pleasure, always ask for Maxwell House.
Next week's guest will be Clinton P. Anderson, former Secretary of Agriculture and newly elected Senator from New Mexico. Now this is Ken Roberts saying goodnight for Miss Inez Robb, Mr. Lawrence Spivak, Mr. Murray Davis, Mr. Glenn Neville, Miss Martha Roundtree, and Dr. George Gallup. Meet the Press is presented to you each week by Maxwell House Coffee. Be sure to look in next week, same time, same station, for Meet the Press, brought to you by the makers of Maxwell House Coffee, the coffee that's always good to the last drop.
This is NBC Television.